Deckers, I got Ray McPadden on today, and we were just talking about Yellowstone National Park. Ray, before we get into it, you know, 75th Rangers, 10th Mountain too, right?
10th Mountain started there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so let's talk about a little bit your military, and then we'll jump right into your good old fashioned awesome gig you have right now. So, military man, you were OBC a little bit after I was. You went infantry. What made you go into the military? I mean, with your background where you're working now, Yellowstone and climbing and all that, infantry, ranger, military, how did that come into the variable?
Yeah, my dad was a career naval officer. So I grew up around, military bases, always thought the Marines were cool, but man, I never really took to water. So the Army felt like the right fit for me, and I wanted to be high speed, man. I wanted to do cool guy stuff. And the Army has a lot of cool units, storied units, with the Rangers, Delta, Green Berets. I just wanted in on that. So September 11th made that easy, man. I wanted to fight. I wanted to get in the fight. I wanted to kill bad guys. So, joined up, basically right after September 11th. I got on the officer track though, right? So I had to wait a bit. And I remember one of the best pieces of advice I ever got, man, I saw like the towers come down. I was like, I'm enlisting tomorrow. I'm in. And, it was an old Ranger Battalion NCO who was like an instructor at Texas A&M, kind of doing the ROTC gig. And he was like, hey, the war is going to be there, man. It's not going anywhere. I promise. And I was like, no, this is like, I got to get in on this. It's, it's going to be over and I'm going to miss the invasion. And, he was right. I mean, that thing went on for 20 years, so that was sage advice. He's like, get on the officer track, finish school, get a degree under your belt, and then get in the fight. It's not going anywhere. So that was, a little bit about my, how I arrived in the infantry.
Yeah. Infantry was a little bit different for me because I was enlisted artillery dude. But 9/11, I was at IOBC. Like, I was ready to go to mount training. And so we were waiting in the field there. And they're like, does anybody from New York here? And we're all like, what is going on, man? Because this is back in the day, man. It was like, I had this little Motorola email thing. So I'm texting back and forth with my wife. And it was weird, man, being in infantry school, going from like a Cold War era to like this new GWAT and going, man, all these infantry dudes here are going to be going to war. I ended up going 05/06, but man, I can imagine, like, I give a lot of credit to those who joined up after 9/11, man.
You kind of knew it was all going to be, real. And obviously, you take training much more seriously when it's, you're getting ready for the real thing. I don't even know, man, what a peacetime army looks like. I heard they used to do a lot of, dog and pony, a lot of marching, a lot of boot shining. So I was spared that military experience, man. It was all fighting. I think I marched one time when I was active duty, like marched in formation, it was all about the fight,
Wherever the conversation brings us today, we might talk about more about the book, but the book is We March at Midnight by Ray McPadden. It's out now. It came out August 3rd. So make sure you check that out, everybody. But I do want to talk about Ray's kind of current gig and transition and stuff like that. I started your book, though. I love it. So everybody pick it up. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I want to talk about Yellowstone, man. How did this whole Yellowstone thing come in? And for everybody that doesn't know, Ray and I were talking ahead of time. And I'm like, he's got like the best gig in the world. He lives outside of Yellowstone National Park.
I was a mountaineering ranger and for the Park Service in Olympic National Park before I was active duty. So I'd always been in love with the national parks, and I had an awesome gig as a young guy in college and before I went, before I went active duty, right? So I was like those summers during college, right? It was, kind of looking for something to do. And so I've been to mountaineering school you know, through the Army. The Army, you know, sent me as a cadet to mountaineering school in Alaska. So then I took that, and that was that sort of got me in with the Park Service as a seasonal employee. And I loved it, man. I climbed for a living. I hung out in the backcountry for a living, got to interact with all kinds of interesting people and see places that most people never get to see. I was deep in the backcountry of Olympic National Park, and that's out by Seattle. And
yeah,
it's on the peninsula, the Olympic Peninsula. So it's sort of a ferry ride to get over there. So it's just hard enough where most people go to Mount Rainier. And Mount Rainier, man, it just gets pounded, and with, you know, just sort of all the Seattle metro area, right? That's where everybody goes. But Olympic's a little more quiet, and some of the bigger peaks in Olympic, it's a really, really long approach to get into them. You're talking 18, 20 miles just to get to like the base of the mountain. So it's really just your hardcore climbers there, your hardcore mountaineers. So it's really interesting to mix with those people, to meet those kinds of people who do that and who are that motivated. Whereas again, to contrast to Mount Rainier, right? You know, you get a lot of weekend warriors, you know, trying to get to the top of Rainier. And so consequently a lot of accidents too. So I was lucky enough, just because you have that hardcore clientele going into the backcountry of Olympic to climb those mountains, they know what they're doing. So my search and rescue duties were, I never had to do a whole lot there, and I'm thankful for that. But that's how I sort of got exposed to the national parks, and actually working in the national park was, you know, as a seasonal, mountaineering and climbing ranger. And so it was always something, even when I went to the military, I wanted to try to find my way back to the parks, right? I was like, that's a cool gig. I want to do that, you know, for a living. And
there's a lot of hiring authorities for people out there who want to transition into like National Park Service or any of the other Fed agencies, Bureau of Land Management or anything work gets you out there and gets you like, it's not militaristic, but it's a very cool experience to be out there in the environment. But take a look at these scheduling authorities. You know, you have 30% or more disabled veterans. You get hired at any grade level. You got Veterans Readjustment Acts. You have all sorts of different things that are out there for you. So really look into these jobs. Look into these seasonal jobs to get your foot in the door. Look at these Pathways programs. There's a program out right now. It's been out for a while now called Pathways, where you go and you work for the agency for a year. Then it can bring you on as a full-time employment. So as a veteran and everything, as transitioning back, you did say before we got on air that you don't want to sleep outside anymore, so you got a new gig. Can you talk about that a little bit? And I'm with you, man. I want nothing to do with sleeping on the ground anymore.
So like the old school, right? You know, hero 20-year-old in the backcountry. I was doing 10-day tours and, you know, totally off the grid. And, you know, sleeping on the side of a mountain. And then, you know, I did that in Afghanistan for real for 15 months. And that sort of, you know, sucked up my motivation to continue to sleep on the side of a mountain, just get tore up by mosquitoes and wet and, you know, sort of trying to keep your fingers and toes from freezing off. So, you know, I wanted to approach the Park Service differently after the military, and grad school opened that door for me. I did environmental planning and policy as a grad student. And that helped get me in, you know, more on the natural resource management side of things with the Park Service. So, you know, not as maybe as romantic as climbing mountains and getting paid for it. But much more, I think, meaningful and a bigger overall impact to be in, sort of more on the management side of things for the Park Service.
Are you recreational climbing still?
I am. Yeah. I am. Yeah. We try to do a lot. We do, you know, it's like SkiMo, right? Ski mountaineering is something we really enjoy. We lived in Colorado for a while and it was easier there. The approaches are way easier. There's roads everywhere in Colorado. Montana, you've got some like monster approaches to get into some of the really cool stuff. And I got two young ones now. I got two little kids. So it's hard, man. You don't necessarily want to take all that free time and go just totally break yourself off, because those kids are just waiting just to pound you into the ground once you get home, right?
So and you're probably gonna, you know, once this book gets over, I can see you writing. You jumped into the fishing world first, right?
Yeah, I did, man. So, I've always loved books, and I love reading, and I love novels, man. So that's where my heart was when I started. Yeah.
I see the, okay. So the book, let's talk the book, and then we'll get into the whole fiction writing. Cause, as you know, on the Protectors, there's been a ton of awesome fiction authors, but We March at Midnight, it shows you going from a regular line unit to the 75th Rangers to doing a whole lot of different things throughout your military, bookmark. I always call everybody in the military, they have like a bookmark. That's just part of their life. Let's talk about that. Different tours, different levels of violence, a lot of loss. How has that transition been for you?
Well, I, you know, transitioning out of the military was rough, man. And I had no idea, you know, like when I initially got out, I really didn't know what I was trying to do. And, sorry, Jason, I've got some background noise here, man.
No problem.
Let me correct that if that's okay.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. I got it. I got it. The transition was hard, and I was, you know, it's like the deeper you go into the combat arms world, I think the harder the transitions are, just with the things you've seen, the things you've done, and then applicable skills on the outside, man. You know, I thought everybody owed, I thought the world owed me something, you know, or it's like, hey, dude, you know, I got a medal for valor. I got Bronze Stars. I got Purple Heart, you know, where's my job? And, you know, that's not the way the civilian world works. Right. So, it was rough, man. It was rocky for a while. And, you know, I knew I wanted back into the Park Service, but, you know, wasn't totally sure how I was going to do that. And so it took, you know, getting into grad school and chasing, you know, higher education. That was the ticket that got me on the right track.
Yeah. I really, really, really wish the government would start, or the military would start doing transition 6 months to a year out, and have realistic, not like, you know, I have my resume, I have progressive, responsible experience. What do you have that's marketable to the civilian world? And what does anybody owe you? Like, the civilian market does not believe they owe you anything. Now, you and I know, you know, thanks to a grateful nation, you did a lot of great things. But the thing is, they don't believe that. And making yourself marketable to them is really the key to getting that job. Like you said, you have to chase the higher education. You have to get skills that are outside of the military, but don't discount your skills from the military. That's the biggest thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Don't like run from that. I did a lot of what I call demilitarizing, right? It was like, you can't interact with most people the way maybe you do on the battlefield with an infantry or a ranger platoon. You know, that's in many places in the world, that's not going to work well if you treat people you treat people like you're in combat. So
you mean you can't just say hua and
hua. Or just maximum negative reinforcement on somebody. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, that's a lot of times that can get you in trouble. So but leadership skills, right? The baseline is, it is universal. And, you know, the lead from the front and set a good example, you know, things like that. Those, like, really, they're almost cliche, man, but that stuff is the go-to anywhere you go. It's that stuff works.
I have to say, that is one thing the civilian market does not understand. And when you write it up right and you put the cliche things, they're like, oh my gosh, wow, this person is value added to our organization, and we don't have to retrain them into the civilian market. And it's kind of, you know, you cannot, you know, 4 years in the military, 10 years in the military or whatever, you have a hell of a background that's marketable to the civilian sector. But making yourself marketable and selling yourself, it's all about that. And you have to network, absolutely network with people, you know, and find other people in the industries that you want to go into.
Networks. Yeah. Networks are huge. I had a lot of friends that, you know, I reached out to, and a lot of people that helped me, and there's, you know, any number of just fantastic veterans organizations too, that are sort of out there to help, you know, men and women who are working through that transition. And I'll name drop a little bit here, Jason, the Pat Tillman Foundation. They helped me with grad school, man. They gave me money and helped kind of make that work for me. And it was, yeah, like it was awesome. So there's a lot of like help out there. And to me, it's like, shame on you if you're not looking, you know, and reaching out to people.
Yeah. There's a ton of resources. I got my current gig on LinkedIn because they saw that I had a background in planning and operations and stuff like that. And I tell people, I'm like, use your network, use people, you know. I've been volunteering with American Corporate Partners for a while, Hire Heroes USA. Go to these organizations, get your resume looked at, get a mentor, find your way, find your niche. If you don't want to go into corporate, you don't want to go into government, and you want to start a small business, look at veterans-owned small businesses. Learn it. There's so many resources out there, and use them to your advantage.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of good people looking out for veterans, and a lot of them are veterans who have successfully transitioned. Right. And those are great sources of information. And there's a lot of tracks you can go down, right? A lot of people, I think, take some of those skills they learned in the military and they sort of, take those into the civilian world. Others, you know, like me, it was like, man, kind of a 180. You know, it was like, I'm going to go put myself and go down a different track. And that can be a scarier world, right? Where you don't have like, okay, I have my skills and I'm transitioning maybe culturally into a different place, but you know, I still have my core skill set. So when you talk about the cultural transition out of the military, that's hard. And then, you know, from a skill standpoint, if you're looking to do something totally different, then that's obviously a big added layer of complexity. And I keep in contact with a lot of guys I serve with, Jason, and it's sort of like across the board where people have landed, and some have done really well, and you know, some guys are struggling, man. You know,
a lot, yeah. Especially, you know, we're not going to touch on it a lot because I don't want it to be the focal point of this conversation, but man, this Afghanistan withdrawal has been hitting a lot of the community hard. I remember when we left Iraq, I felt like a kick in the gut. I can only imagine what everybody that served in Afghanistan is feeling right now.
Yeah. There's I think there's like, you know, the 12 stages of losing a war in terms of the emotional arc or whatever, you know. I think I'm in like the third stage right now. And you know, for many, right, the first like 24 to 48 hours, man, it was hard to even function. I was just really, really upset and, you know, not in a good place. And, you know, what helped was, man, I reached out and started calling people, guys I was there with, man. It was like, hey, you know, everything you did mattered. And it was an honor serving with you, man. Just kind of started some conversations like that and had some just amazing, just phone calls and texts and like had a lot of fun reconnecting with people. Time and distance just get in the way, man, you know, and you're brothers forever. Right. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you're on the phone every day and you're talking to each other, seeing each other all the time. So I think that was one thing that I definitely encourage other Afghan vets to do is, man, reach out to your old battle buddy, man, and just say what's up, you know.
I see a lot of people stepping up right now. A lot of, you know, you always have the typical bro vet community out there who's always flexing on social media, but I'm seeing a lot of just normal vets and normal people in the public stepping up and saying, hey, you know what? We got a mission. We got to do it. We got to get these people out. We got to do this. We got to do that. I like seeing that. I hate the circumstances where I have to see that, but I do like that. Just like you said, the people reaching out, the people stepping up. I do like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been cool to see, like, you know, the guys over there too, that are, you know, they're helping with that evacuation. That's a good mission, right? What you want, I think a lot of people in the military want, you want a good mission that matters and that means something. And I hope those guys and the men and women on the ground right now, you know, feel good about what they're doing and, you know, 100%, you know, behind you. And, it's a noble thing trying to help people out there and just that whole kind of mess going on.
Well, you know, I can see you writing your book because your book does detail your numerous tours, including Iraq and Afghanistan. And it must have been like just a great experience to get it out. It must have hurt like hell writing it, but getting it out there and getting it on paper, not for you, but for the people that you served with. Because 99% of the authors that I talk to who have written a nonfiction book about their combat experience do it for those they served with. And I'm so glad that you did this. Growing up, all I had was the books from at the long range recon, a few Green Beret books here and there. But there wasn't a lot of books. We need books about the Army, about the cost of war, the reality of war from the platoon level on up. It, you know, because you can get these 30,000 foot overview letters, stuff from generals and stuff, but it's not the same. But thank you for writing the book. We March at Midnight. I keep having to look over there. I'm like, it's an easy title. But I am about 30 pages into it, and I got a lot more to go.
It's, yeah, it was a really enjoyable. Writing to me is like meditative, right? Like you don't necessarily, like you're sort of, it's this mental exercise, and then things come out of it that you didn't necessarily foresee when you started. Right. And you sort of get to this, you know, you can kind of get to like transcendence, right. With your sort of thoughts and your observational power and like your conclusions about like what you're seeing and what happened over there. So it was really cool to go on that journey. And it was always, you know, a goal, right, of mine that, you know, you're writing it for the guys who are there with you too, and hoping that they would read it, that they could see themselves in it. In many cases they're reading scenes where it's like, yeah, that's, you know, obviously, you know, I'm talking about them a great deal of the time, but, it was fun to kind of look back and remember some of that and then tease out, you know, where, you know, like the memory is an interesting thing, right? Like these neurons start firing, and I was writing this 10 years after it happened. And I think I'm better for it. I think if I would have wrote it, you know, like, you know, a couple days after my last tour, it would have been a lot more immature. It would have been a lot more like raw, you know, kind of just raw emotion. And I don't think the wisdom was there yet, man. So I think it's cool. Like the stuff that comes out of a war after where people have some kind of some distance from it, you know, and obviously the war just kind of ended, and we'll see if it's actually over. I kind of think it's not.
Yeah, we're going to see here.
Yeah, but for a lot of the, you know, the veterans, you know, the people who are there for kind of that first phase of the war, you know, it's there's been a lot of time and space now. So I think that's when the best stuff comes out, is after it's sort of been going on for a while, or it's been over for a while.
Well, I'm going to put you on a spot right now. I do have a Protectors book club, and I want to do a live cast. I want to read the book. So give me a few weeks. I want to bring you on live, and I want to go through this book, because it caught me right out of the gate. It caught me with violence of action and losing someone. I do want to bring you on air. I want to get some other authors. I want to round table with you. I want to talk about this and flush the book out. I don't want to discount the book. And I want to read it. I'm really looking forward to it, Ray. It's catching me, because, you know, with the similarities in our minimal similarities in our background, I can't climb worth a shit, and I haven't been to Ranger school. So yeah. But let's have you on for that.
I'd love to, Jason. I love what you're doing, man. I really do. And yeah, I've heard a number of the podcasts, you know, previous ones, and it's really cool. So I'd love to do that with you.
When is the next book coming out?
I just cranked out two books in the span of like 5 years, right? And nobody's ghostwriting for me, man. This is all me. This is all me. And I love writing, right? And I had a professor in grad school that I thought highly of. I worked for him, and he was always like, respect the reader, respect the reader, respect the reader. And that's important to me, man. So mm-hmm. A lot of attention to writing craft. You know, I don't have a giant platform. I'm not already famous. So, you know, I had to earn it with the writing quality, right? And the storytelling quality, you know.
It's good, man.
Yeah.
No, I like it. And yeah. I always say that, because everybody, man, when you jump into that fiction world, I think it's different than nonfiction. Your audience, your readers, your fans, they expect it every 6 months to a year. Like Jack Carr just kicked out 5 books. We had Brad Taylor on the other day or last night, and he's like writing and writing and writing and writing. And you're right about the ghostwriters. There's a lot of ghostwriters out there right now. I mean, you could tell the authors that have them and the ones that don't. But I think you're going to get a good rhythm. Give it a few years.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, man. And it's like, Yeah. I want it to be, you know, I want it to be great. I want it to be epic. Right. So that it takes some time to feel like you're putting out a really high quality product, and it takes a ton of mental energy, man. You're just smoked from doing, you know, when I think you try to do it well, you know, and you revise. And then the whole time you're doing it right, you should be reading too. And I love reading, man. And especially I read outside the military genre constantly. And, you know, that's sort of like, you know, the military sort of genres is not, you know, necessarily my go-to. If I have a choice, that's not going to be the thing I pick up. It's going to be just other stuff. I love stuff about the West. So it's something I definitely aspire to keep writing. And I like novels, man. So that's probably where I'm heading in the future.
Yeah. I audiobook most of my fiction. I read the nonfiction, and then I'm always have like 50 different things going on at once. I get so many books, and I'm really trying to read the books before I have an author on. But it's getting tough, man. I just wish I had time to, I want to sit down and read. I just don't have the time, man. And yeah, you know, that's why I'm like, you know, in 3 weeks we'll get you back on for the book club. 'Cause 3 weeks I can knock it out, you know?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. No, and I would just fiction and nonfiction real quick too, man. Like, you know, you write something, you know, about the war and about your service and stepping up to fight, and you get a lot of good feedback, man, a lot of positive feedback. And it's like people are a lot nicer to you than, and then in the fiction world, even though you're like, man, this novel I did was, you know, semi-autobiographical too, but people are just, they're way harsher, man, in the fiction side. And they're willing, you know, 'cause it's like, okay, well, it's not real. So like, I can be real with you and say, you suck. Right.
And they do. I was reading, like last, when I had Brad Taylor on, I went back and I read the reviews for One Rough Man, his first book. And I was like, damn. And I didn't bring him up during the interview, but I was like, man, I'm like, come on, you know, it's his first book. He's true to life, you know? But I really like the book. I'm like, I don't know where these reviewers come from. I'm like, it's supposed to be like a movie. You know, I always figured the fiction books are like a movie. If I could escape for a while and I get a good read out of it, and it's something a little bit different than the other one I read, it's good. I'm not going to go and knock the author. And I see Jack Carr does the reviews, Don Bentley, all those guys are always, they talk about the reviews, and you're just like, I don't know if I could handle that, man. I think I might just stick to nonfiction.
Yeah, it is, man. People are, when they don't know you, man, and they're, you know, the internet, you know, you have the, you know, the sort of anonymity of the internet, and it's just people are, they'll be straight up brutal with you. Now I don't want to misrepresent myself. Well, I'll also tell you, I won a national award, you know, is the best military novel of the year from the American Library Association. So it's good work. It's good work, but you know, you can't make everybody happy.
You can never make everybody happy. Well, Ray, we're going to have you again on soon, and everybody pick up We March at Midnight, a war memoir. It's out now. Pick it up. It's going to be a good read. From the 30 pages I read, it will be a good read. So please do pick that up. Ray, thanks again.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Jason.